The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I am, of course, broadcasting from behind these enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is October the 7th, 2016. It is a Friday. It is a wet Friday here in North Carolina, and I suppose that that rain is related to the hurricane. And I forget, what is it, Hurricane Matthew, I believe is what they named this particular hurricane, has killed about 200, close to 300 people in the Caribbean, and is making its way up the east coast of the United States. Now, I'm in western part of North Carolina. I'm not anywhere near the coast, so I'm not really worried about it. But we do have a lot of people out there who are in the path of this destruction. I hope that you have made your way to a place that is safer. And I hope for those who could not leave, you know, I hope that you are able to make it through it. I actually have some family members impacted by this. My first cousin and her husband retired and moved to Florida, and they had to get hotel accommodations in Georgia, further inland Georgia, because I believe they live in that impacted area in Florida, that's near the coast. So I think they forced the evacuation of over a million people or so just in Florida alone. I know South Carolina has also been telling people to leave and to come upstate and to get out of those flood prone areas. And of course, our Black Talk Radio Network family member and my abolitionist comrade Max Parthas, the last time South Carolina had some very bad inclement weather, he and his family were severely impacted by that. In fact, they lost everything, as it was a flood there, and, you know, destroyed, water damage and what have you. But they are in a new place now, and I think they may actually be kind of close. I don't want to give away his location. I don't need to put that out over the airways, but I'm hoping that he is not in an impacted area. And I haven't heard from him today, so it's possible that they may have lost power. I'm not sure. So, but we are scheduled to have a special broadcast of New Abolitionist Radio later tonight. We are going to review the documentary film, The 13th, which debuted early this morning on Netflix. So if you haven't watched it, it's up and it's available. So you can go check it out after this program, hopefully. But yeah, I just watched it this afternoon. I actually had posted my thoughts about it on the social media platform, and we are going to talk about that film in depth tonight. And I'll just say that I was skeptical while also hopeful. And I will say that the film does a great job in explaining the symptoms of slavery, but they do not make clear that what we're dealing with is slavery. You had Michelle Alexander in the film and kept saying mass incarceration, mass incarceration, mass incarceration. I kept hearing the reform criminal justice system, reform criminal justice system. I did not hear any calls for the abolition of slavery. I kept hearing people in it saying, you know, when slavery ended, wait a minute. Now, the name of this film is The 13th. I'm hoping they told you the name of this film that you participating in and that you actually went and read The 13th Amendment. And if you did, that's good because you're supposed to do your homework. And I'm willing to forgive you if you did your homework, but because of the programming you have received all your life, you have not retrained your brain to stop saying that slavery ended. So I kept hearing, I heard that more than once. You know, slavery ended in 1865 and blah, 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 blah. Again, I thought it was a good film on quote unquote mass incarceration. I do not think that if it was supposed to be about how slavery never ended, I don't think they did. I think they could have done, let me choose my words carefully here. I think they could have done a better job in making that clear if that was their intention. And there was not enough focus put on the 13th Amendment. So that's all I'm going to say now. I'm going to say my commentary for New Abolitionist Radio tonight's special broadcast. I'm not sure what time. I'm yet to hear from the guys about what time, whether we're going to do it at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time or if we're going to do it at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. So once I hear from them, then I will post the information to I'll schedule it on our YouTube channel that we just newly started streaming on. And shout out to the YouTube listeners, I will not be checking that chat room because need another computer with this software that I'm running to produce videos and what have you and to stream them live. And I have different applications open, and that's just one more thing that could cause my computer to lock up because too many different programs want to share. So please, I'm gonna always open the chat room so y'all can talk about whatever, but I can't take any questions any longer from the chat room for the reason I just laid out. But the telephone line is open, so let me get that telephone number out. I'm only going to be on air for an hour today because I want to start working towards putting together that special broadcast for tonight. I made a couple of audio clips from the film, but I still need to edit them and just get prepared for tonight's program where we're going to review on New Abolitionist Radio the 13th, the documentary film that just came out. But the telephone number, oh, I see we got Max on the board. Max, hold on, brother. Let me get through my introduction. Good to see that you ain't flooded out like you were the last time. Well, hopefully you are not calling in to report that you got flooded out. But let me give the telephone number. The telephone number is 1-641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. And then you just hit *6 and 1. If you would like to share some commentary on air, ask me a question for clarification, whatever. I'm all about answering any questions that you may have out there. I will not be opening up the Skype line. You know, I talked about the other day, but I'm just so disappointed in Skype. I've used it for years with digital radio, and the quality just gets worse. The audio quality is great. The audio quality is great, but the application itself tends to lock up on you, just all kind of problems. Yesterday, I couldn't even open Skype. It wouldn't even let me connect it, so I went to check on that new web-based Skype application that they had in beta, and it's out of beta now. But guess what? It don't work, Skype. It don't work. So our studio line is attached to that. So I'm not going to use that. I'm not going to use that because it's just too many problems. All right. So the main topic that I want to talk about today is concerning the film. Again, we will be reviewing the 13th this evening, and I hope that you will tune in because I certainly got a page full of notes, and I did make some audio clips, and that's going to be a special broadcast of New Abolitionist Radio. And if you have had time to watch the film, we hope that you will participate in the discussion that we hope you will have with us surrounding that film tonight. Again, I don't know if we're going to come on at 9 p.m. or 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern. I'm kind of leaning towards 10 p.m. Eastern because that gives, you know, people who get off of work at 5 or something like that, working at 9 to 5, have time to watch it. And then by 10, you know, they will be able to comment on what they saw. Now, but today, I want to focus on The Birth of a Nation. I want to focus on Nate Parker's film, but not so much of his film, but the emotional reaction that I'm seeing from black people on social media because a history professor, an African-American and African history professor at Ohio State, a black woman, okay, and she wrote a critique about his film. And I shared it on Black Talk Radio Network's Facebook page. I shared it in btrcommunity.com. I read it. I thought she made some very valid points about so many things. And I'll share bits and pieces from her article. I hope to get her on the program next week sometime. But what I'm not understanding is her very thought out critique of this film. I mean, look, every film that comes out, now I don't know if they do it for television programs, but there are movie people who get paid to do nothing but review movies, okay? So that everybody should expect a critique of the film, but you got people being emotional, freaking out, talking about she trying to destroy the film, and I hope y'all say this about when these other white people come out with films, that y'all going at them as y'all going at this one and talking about the historical inaccuracies and all of that. And I mean, basically what I was getting was, first, a number of you didn't even read the article. You read the headline. And it was a provocative headline, and she may not have even chose that headline, but it was a provocative headlines. And I think the headline, if I remember, and I'll bring it up, the article up, or the critique of the film review was basically what it was, from a history professor's perspective. And so, it was very well written, and it touched upon a number of social issues. But what I was getting, you know, the first thing was, you know, this isn't a historical film. But Nate Parker said it was going to be. He, out of his mouth, when he was questioned, he was asking, I'm paraphrasing, is this just going to be another Django? You know, a fictional tale about a African enslaved and rebelling, and you know, the film by what's his name, Quentin Tarantino, and what is this going to be another Django? You know, based on real events, like people really were enslaved and still are for that matter. But and there were black people who were in the Union Army and what have you. So, I mean, it's based on a little bit of historical facts and what have you. But the rest is all fiction. And so Mr. Parker was asked whether or not he was going to remain true to Nat Turner's story in the historical facts of the rebellion. And I haven't seen it. I'm going off of this history professor's critique. She got an advanced copy. I mean, she went to an advanced screening. So she saw it way before it even hit the theaters for the rest of the public, but she withheld her commentary until after other people got to see it. I guess she didn't want to be accused of affecting how much money white people gonna make at the box office, because Nate Parker already been paid. He got his $18 million in the bank. So all the rest of the money that comes in goes into the pockets of racist suspects like Rupert Murdoch, who owns 20th Century Fox. I think that's who bought the rights to the movie for $18 million. So Nate got paid. So, you know, there are just so many emotional arguments that I'm hearing towards this woman, and even attacking the page for sharing the article. That's like anti-intellectualism. This one person is going to say, well, how she know what happened back then? I'm like, wow, dude, really? I mean, he did have a trial, you know. There were newspaper reports on it. You know, he did, it was written down what he said. And so there are different accounts from when it happened. So that's what she going by as a historian. She going by the historical record, what's available, what we do know from parties involved. So, I mean, this is just the height of anti-intellectualism. It's the height of emotionalism. And I'm not... And I understand where it's coming from. So don't think that I'm putting y'all on blast who've had these feelings and thoughts and expressing them. I'm not really attacking you, but I'm just pointing out the problems that I see with you attacking this woman over her very good review of this film that she saw. And from a historical perspective, it's like facts don't matter. So that's what we will talk about. I'll share some of those comments that were posted to our social media page. And I just want to have a conversation. Does facts matter in media? Do they matter? Or are we so starved to see ourselves up on that big screen that we accept anything, long as it's got black people and it's about black people and they are the central characters and what have you? In historic, whether it's promoting truth and presenting these characters who were real life people based on the historic accounts of them, from their family members, from those who knew them, from their enemies, those they fought against, just, you know. So, you know, I believe media is the most powerful entity on the face of the planet, as Malcolm X said, because it controls the minds of the masses. So media has to be done correctly if we're going to tell black stories, especially historical stories like that, because we know that the majority of Americans, not just black people, get their history from what? From movies. And we know they ain't getting the truth about everything, or if at all, in the public school system. So that's why it's important when we talk about, make movies about historical figures in the history of this country and indeed the history of the world, that we remain truthful. We remain close to the facts as possible. Now, I can understand like scenes where you create fictional scenes of interactions between people, what they might have been, you know, day-to-day conversations as they went through their lives, and because you don't know that. Yeah, I could see taking, what they call it, artistic license with that. But then when you tell things about the rebellion and present, and people going to take them as fact, and it's not what actually happened, I mean, why do we have to embellish that story? It's fantastic enough. It's exciting enough. It's entertaining enough. It's intriguing enough. I come up with all kind of words to describe his story and those who participated. We don't have to embellish it for entertainment factor or what have you. Facts do matter, because too many people think they're getting history, the historical facts from these movies, and then they'll be telling somebody else, yo, you know, Nat Turner's wife got raped. And she was never raped. She didn't suffer no gang rape. Well, he killed, rose up and killed his own master. That didn't happen. So why put it in there? Didn't he kill enough people that you just could have showed him killing the people he actually did kill? I don't understand. Why not remain true to the already written story from the historical record? So anyway, if you have any commentary on that, if you've seen the film, now I'm going to tell you, I don't pay to go to the movies. I have not been to a movie theater in over 20 years for various reasons. And one of the reasons is I'm not going to keep funding the enemy's propaganda. I'll wait for it, somebody to come through with a copy on the DVD or something, or I'll go online and watch it for free. And yeah, I'm admitting sometimes I do watch things for free. Now, I did go ahead and invest in a Netflix account, which is nothing but $10 a month. And they have a lot of good documentaries on there as well as other stuff. And so, yeah, I invested in that. But in terms of putting money in the box office of Racist Suspects, I'm not going to do that. At least Netflix did sponsor the Hip Hop Film Festival NYC, which we were also a sponsor of. At least they did sponsor that independent black media festival that was going on that our media partner Revolution Media put together in New York City, and we had an intern who actually went. So at least they did do that. And you will find more even entertainment series that starring black people. But again, I don't watch a whole lot of stuff like that. From time to time I may, so I don't feel bad about my investment of $10 a month into Netflix. I want to see them keep putting out these type of films and what have you, and sponsoring independent media. But in terms of the Fox company, hell no. Rupert Murdoch ain't getting a dime from me. So anyway, without further delay, let's go ahead and bring on my abolitionist comrade, Max Parthas. Max, thanks for hanging on, man. Well, I went on a little ramble there. I didn't mean to keep you waiting that long, but what's on your mind?
Peace, Scotty. Just listening to you, and, you know, I feel like you're right. I was watching the same thing unfold with the Luke Cage series. You know, I'm a huge fan of Luke Cage. I grew up reading him, you know, back when he had the fluffy shirt and his cleavage hanging out and skin-tight pants and a big gold tiara on his head with, you know, kind of an afro going on. This is a different character, and they're remaking it. And I mentioned to some people that were reviewing it that I wasn't really impressed with the quality of it. You know what I mean? It's great that they have this black artist portraying a black comic book hero, and we need more of those, but I thought they could have did better on the storyline, you know, recreating the story. And people started feeling some kind of way because I said that. Like, I was attacking it. So, yeah, I
can understand, Max. I can understand. I have actually been watching Luke Cage. And so since I did not read the comic book, I wouldn't know any better, you know. So, but I have heard others like you say how it did not, you know, remain true to the comic book. But in terms of this film, Birth of a Nation, we're not talking about fictional characters. We're talking about a real right. character. And I think it's important that you remain as close as possible. I don't see anything that should hinder you from sticking to the facts.
Well, I can't, you know, comment on that film yet. I plan on watching it, not at the movies, but, you know, there are ways. And then I'll save my commentary for that. I have been looking forward to it, and still all of the controversy came out. And now, adding to that list, what you're saying is how they're not staying true to the historical aspect. And also, the article that you shared where the professor was talking about how, you know, women of color in there barely have any place at all and are treated as you know, just totally in need of a strong man to be able to take care of them, kind of threw me off.
Yeah, and she says Gabrielle Union, which she says, you know, plays a good character, but never even speaks at all, has no speaking part in the movie. You see her. And she said that, and I'm going to share some of this on the article, from the article. I'm actually pulling it up now. But yeah, she just didn't touch upon that. She was saying how black women are portrayed as just simply being helpless victims who didn't fight back and who were sitting around waiting on a strong black man to come save them. And I could see how a woman might feel some kind of way about that, given all of the strong women who were abolition. I mean, damn, Harriet Tubman was killing folks, man. She actually led a Union Army battalion, I think it was a battalion, it might have been a smaller than a battalion, into South Carolina, man, and freed about 700 victims of slavery. So, I mean,
we are constantly on New Abolitionist Radio profiling abolitionists who were women and strong women and leaders and did what was necessary regardless of the cost.
Right. So I can understand from a woman's perspective, which she is a woman, I might not have even picked up on that, you know?
Right, right. Well, we tend to think as who we are.
Right, right.
Can't necessarily be faulted for that. I am very excited tonight about 13th, though. It's out on Netflix now. So if you're listening, you can go ahead and get on Netflix. It's a free membership for the 30 days, I believe, so you only have to pay for it. Just get you a membership and go watch it. And tune in tonight for our conversation. I'm in agreement with Scotty. 10 p.m. sounds like a good time to give people an opportunity across the coast, both coasts, to be able to get home and take a look at it.
Right.
But yeah, if you don't have you don't have a Netflix account, just get one and go watch it. It's that important, I think.
Yeah, have you had an opportunity to watch it yet, Max?
No, I'm planning on watching it in another hour with my wife and family. We're going to sit here and watch it together.
Okay, I won't comment on it during the rest of this program anymore. I got about 33 minutes left because I made some clips that I'm going to also share tonight on the broadcast.
Don't let me stop you, brother. Don't let me stop you if you're going to comment
No, I'm not. No. I already have been commenting on it, and I actually mentioned you. I will say this, Max. There, towards the end, it's going to be a scene or a series of scenes that's going to make you very angry because you just recently spoke out about people profiting off of these police snuff films.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very disconcerting for me. A big issue when people are getting paid on snuff films to watch other people get murdered. It's outlandish. But anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing it, man. Sit back when we have dinner together, we're gonna watch this film, and then probably talk about it as a family, and then call in and talk with the community. I definitely want the community involved, and I want to hear people's opinions on it, because you know how long we've been fighting to get this out. And I just saw Color of Change release an advertisement about it and had a little something to say, not much, but we've been trying to get them to mention this now for years, and they just act like they're ignorant.
He's in the film.
I also saw that Tavis Smiley has nothing to say about it. He's pushing his new book. I went through his pages, nothing at all. So I'm assuming there's a number of haters out there who, for whatever reason, don't want to either speak on this film that's out or share it or even let people know that it's out there.
More importantly, though, Max, there's a lot of them. You mentioned, and I went through their Twitter accounts and Facebook pages, and I'm not going to call out any names, but let's just say to showcase black media personalities, news anchors and what have you, or associated with a certain platform, I mean, certain corporate media platforms, not a word about the prison strikes against prison slavery that have been ongoing for, what, over 3 weeks now?
Yeah. And you know, I'm the type, I will call out names, Scotty, you know what I mean? I'll do it on
okay,
a regular
Soledad, basis. Soledad O'Brien, Joy Ann Reed, Don Lemon, and they can't say they don't know about them because I've been tweeting some of the stories that have been coming out and some of the videos that the activists demonstrating outside the prisons have been posting to social media. I shared the tag with them. And so I don't want anybody out just, oh, I didn't know, dog, bull crap. You on Twitter. And I tweeted it at you.
There's some people that, you know, I respect it and like who even have been on our program, our New Abolitionist Radio, and act like they don't know nothing about the prison labor work strike or about the 13th film coming out. An example would be Kevin Alexander Gray. I love him to death. He's been a guest on the program. We've talked about abolition. He has a forum or a blog site about, I think it's named after the newspaper by Frederick Douglass. And nonetheless, I've never seen him say anything yet about the prison labor work strike or about the 13th. Now, he's not under anybody's payroll that I know of. He's just like me, a brother that shares a lot of information on a regular basis, but he never says anything about this, and it confuses the hell out of me. I've reached out to him and haven't heard anything from him. So I'm very confused why certain people who we expect to put this out there or to share it or to be aware of it are not doing so, as if on purpose.
Yeah, it seems on purpose, and I actually had questions for, because I did a video, a screenshot, and I see you other callers. Give me just a second. I actually had made a video. I said, I'm not going to publish this, because when I made it, I was kind of feeling a certain kind of way, and it might come across as I'm an angry black man, and I'm attacking other black people. So I was like, no, I'm not going to publish this. But I took screenshots of Your Black World. I took screenshots of Breaking Brown. That's Boyce Watkins. That's Yvette Carnell. Well, they reach hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people through their platforms. Not a single article. Not a single mention of the prison strikes that's been going on. The only thing I heard found on Breaking Brown about the prison strikes was from when Free Alabama 2 years ago launched the prison strike. That's the only article, but that's from 2 years ago. So I was like, wow, you had courage back then or whatever. Why you thought it was important to publish back then? Why aren't, you know, 3 weeks now we're into this. Men are on hunger strikes. Men are being punished. Even women, I heard a woman's prison joined in. So people are being abused for rising up against slavery, modernized slavery. And you're independent black media source. You don't depend on me. So, I don't know, man. I asked the question. I was like, I hope ain't none of y'all invested in private prison companies. And that's why y'all ain't saying nothing about it. And that is why y'all talking about this reform crap and calling it mass incarceration instead of calling it modern slavery.
There are two instances on Dr. Boykin's website where I went and viewed certain things that bothered me, and it made me very confused. One where he was very clearly saying about how slavery ended in 1865, and I approached him on his page and tried to clarify that. I never got any response from him. Pretty sure that he was aware of the circumstances. And then further on, I heard another one where he was talking about how he's comparing himself to Harriet Tubman using his wealth building and, you know, getting people out of slavery, and he's comparing economic slavery to chattel slavery, and he's the new Harriet Tubman. So those things kind of threw me off about his mindset and how he sees all of
Max,
this. So at this point, I really don't expect much out of him, because he appears to be a type who believes that slavery has ended, sees this as some kind of
error in
judgment. No, he
doesn't believe that. He doesn't believe that.
Doesn't have much to say.
I'm going to tell you why. Do you remember when I put up that petition on the White House website that if you get 50,000 signatures, then President Obama will address whatever it is issue you bringing up in that petition? Do you remember when I put up that petition about the 13th Amendment and I asked him in Congress to review the exception clause of the 13th Amendment and to remove it? Well, I shared that petition with Boyce Watkins, and I asked him in a private message, would you please share this with your listener? You got a lot of followers on Facebook and what have you, so you can reach more people than I can. I really want to hear the CEO. I didn't call him CEO of USA Inc., but I said, I really want to hear President Obama address the 13th Amendment. And he emailed me back, and he was like, this is brilliant. This is excellent. He shared it on his Facebook page. And then about 3 weeks later, he's coming out with a letter to President Obama signed by Will Smith, Lil Wayne, and a whole bunch of other celebrities asking the president to do something about mass incarceration.
Yeah, exactly, Scotty. I don't even know what to say about cats like this, man. They need to see this film more than anybody else. I'm not going to...
Max, you might... I'm just going... I'm going to warn you, Max. I'm going to warn you, because I don't want... I just want you to go in watching this film as a skeptic. Because I know how long we've been pushing this concept, and I just don't want you to have a hard fall, bro.
Well, you know, if it comes out to the point where it's deceptive and deceiving people, you can rest assured I'm going to be one of the first people to say so. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to be the loudest voice out there. This is some BS.
The film has value. The film does have value. Let me put that out there. The film does have value. If you want to learn about the symptoms of slavery, without actually calling it slavery. Yeah. What's that, Max?
We spoke about this last Wednesday when I addressed my concerns about who was actually in the film and what they've already done. Like Michelle Alexander pushing the mass incarceration title, which has become highly popular now. So she's a spokesperson on there, and then you have Newt Gingrich. I'm like, why the hell is Newt Gingrich even on here? Like, he's one of the epitomes of white supremacy, you know what I mean? So there are issues that I've already seen and been concerned with. But at the same time, for me, the main goal is to get people out there thinking about this connection between the 13th Amendment and what we see today and call modern-day slavery.
Towards the end,
that, it's done it.
Towards the end, I hope that the people don't get too confused, but towards the end, there's a white activist, I forget his name, he actually talks about the 13th Amendment. All right, and they actually put up the text of the 13th Amendment. Now, that right there, I hope people will not be confused with the reform message that they're going to hear for about an hour and a half before they show that.
A reform message.
That's what I'm getting from it. Okay, but Max, let me move on, man. I got a couple of other callers, and I do want to share some of this article.
Okay, I'm going to get off and continue listening. You have a great show, and I look forward to speaking with you later tonight.
All right, thank you.
Peace.
Let me just share a little bit from this article that was published on the independent news media outlet, The Nation, which has done great work on in reporting on political, social issues that are going on and what have you. I do recommend thenation.com. They have done a lot of great work in exposing a lot of stuff or confirming, you know, what some people already knew. So anyway, you had, and this is the sister actually of, this is the sister of Michelle Alexander who penned this article. I'm going to try to get her on the program. Her name is Leslie Alexander, and she is a professor of history at Ohio State. I believe it's Ohio State University. So I'm just going to share a little bit from the article. It says, a firestorm of controversy has swirled around Nate Parker in the film The Birth of a Nation in the 2 months since several media outlets revealed that Parker and his co-author, Gene MacGiani Celestine, stood trial for raping a young woman in 1999. Now, I'm going to say this. I was defending this man on this, okay, saying that his history is irrelevant to the film. It's irrelevant. You know, we can argue all day whether an all-white jury would actually acquit a black man for allegedly raping a white woman. I mean, we could talk about all that, but that's irrelevant in my opinion. So I understand what the racist media is trying to do, to assassinate the film by assassinating the filmmaker's character. So I ain't under no illusions. I am not, I wasn't born yesterday. So it says, across the country, social media lit up as people debated Parker's guilt, questioned whether to boycott the film, and expressed outrage about violence against women. As the storm raged, however, one critical issue was ignored. No one questioned the fundamental value or quality of the film. Based on the standing ovations it received at the Sundance Film Festival, we assume that The Birth of a Nation was inherently valuable, inspirational, educational, and transformative. Let me jump down. She says we were wrong. The Birth of a Nation claims to tell the true story of Nat Turner, leader of the bloodiest And see, trying to stop using improper words. The bloodiest rebellion against slavery in United States history. A film on Turner is long overdue. And as a professional historian of the black experience in the 19th century, I have anxiously awaited one. I was especially encouraged by September's issue of Vanity Fair, in which Parker stated that he had become, and she put this in quote, this is his words, obsessed with the idea of telling Nat Turner's story, and that he sought to create, and this is in quotation, historical fidelity in his depiction of the leader of the rebellion. So let's look up what fidelity means. Fidelity, I think, off the top of my head, means remaining true, being true, you know. So let's go ahead and look up the definition of that word so that we have some clarity. Fidelity is the quality of faithfulness or loyalty. Its original meaning regarded duty in a broader sense than the related concept of fealty. All right, so both words derive from Latin. So, again, it's about being faithful to the truth. He was going to be loyal to Nat Park's story, loyal to the facts. After attending an advanced screening of the film, however, I now know that Parker failed miserably in his mission. Contrary to his promises of historical fidelity, Parker created a deeply flawed, historically inaccurate movie that exploits and distorts Nat Turner's story and the history of slavery in America. Nearly everything in the movie, ranging from Turner's relationship with his family to his life as a victim of slavery, those are my words, let's stop calling these people slaves, man, and even the rebellion itself, is a complete fabrication. Certainly, the film contains sprinklings of historical fact, but the bulk of Parker's story about the rebellion is fictitious. Nat Turner did not murder his owner, nor did he kill a slave patroller. Turner's rebellion was not betrayed by a young boy or by anyone else involved in the revolt. To the contrary, the rebels fought until the bitter end. So there was no surrender. There was no surrender, and there was no proxy racism. Again, proxy racism is where non-white people aid the system of racism, and in this case, slave-based racism, or race-based slavery is more accurate term. Let me see. The shootout depicted in Jerusalem, Virginia, never happened because the rebels were stopped by the militia before they ever reached Jerusalem. The list of inaccuracies, distortions, and fabrications go on and on. Admittedly, and I'll share this and then we'll hit the phone lines. I did miss my first break. I'm going to take that right quick. Not going to be long. Admittedly, historical accuracy probably matters more to me than to most people. And I'm feeling her on that as an amateur historian. And Parker was correct when he somewhat flippantly told journalist Anderson Cooper that nothing is ever 100% historically accurate. But how do we feel when the film contains only a smidgen of historical fact? And what if the historical inaccuracies are damaging and insidious? And she gives some, insidious means seemingly being harmless, but actually causing harm. But you putting on this face like, oh, this is like America does. I call it an insidious nation, projects this face to the world that they are beacon of freedom and democracy, and they care about everybody's human rights and civil rights and whatever else kind of rights, and they constantly violating those principles. So they are insidious. They're rotten to the core, like a rotten apple. Or an apple that is infected with worms. You can't tell from the outside, but when you take a bite into it, oh, damn, it's infested with worms. So let me take this quick station identification break and we'll hit the phone lines. She does provide some examples. If I have time, I'll share them later. But I just don't understand why people are getting upset and saying, oh, she's destroying the film. And what do y'all care about if them racists make $1 billion off this film? They pocket been paid. And some people going to say, well, make sure we attack the white film. Do we not always attack these white films when they come out, like The Gods of Egypt? Remember when that film came out? Black Twitter, Black Facebook, everybody was writing about, come on, it's 2016 now. Can we stop with the lies of portraying African people as Caucasians or Europeans? Okay. So, we have called those people out for their historical inaccuracies in films that are supposed to be depicting history. So, to me, those people are being consistent. They're demanding consistency. They're demanding, they're putting the same demands on Nate Parker as a film director as they would a white person. And again, I understand some people, man, these things don't matter to them. The facts don't matter. They just happy to see a film with black people on there, get to kill a couple of white people and almost escape, but then, you know, to get brutally, you know, terminated at the end of the movie. And, man, come on. We have to stop being emotional. And we cannot be race-based with our criticism. If a black person tells some lies, how is that any different than some white lies? Especially if that black person telling white lies. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., where facts do matter.
Of issues affecting Afro-descendant people all over the planet. If media can control the minds of the masses, as Malcolm X once said, then you must ask yourself, who is in control of the media targeting the masses of black people today? Help bring back independence, self-determination, and respect for black culture in the production of global media by joining the effort to crowdfund new black media for the new millennium. Visit blacktalkmediaproject.org for more information on how you can invest in public black radio for the masses.
And welcome back. That did not play correctly. Again, I'm using this new software that we're using to do video streaming, which I'm actually going to use because I can hear somebody tonight when we review the 13th. Well, if you got a problem with her film, why don't you make your own film? Well, I already done sent messages to Max and Johannin, and we even had LaRon Barton, a writer out of California, offer to participate in the project to do our own documentary on the 13th. Now, I got this professional software that the donors of Black Talk Media Project have allowed me to be able to purchase, and it is real professional type software, and I can put together a documentary with this. I just need the other guys to help me write the scenes and stuff like that to really, really show you the truth and expose everything about the 13th Amendment and how slavery was never abolished, and we ain't dealing with no mass incarceration, and you cannot reform slavery. You have to abolish slavery. So yeah, I'm already on it. We're going to make our very first, the Black Talk Media Project is going to produce its very first documentary on no budget, basically. We'll just say it's going to be a low budget film, unless we get a rash of donations come in all of a sudden. All right, let me go to the phone lines to those people who have been patiently hanging on while Scotty, you know, got his thoughts out there. So let's go to 973. Thank you for calling in. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Good evening. Good afternoon, Mr. Reed and audience. I did get a chance to review The Birth of a Nation, and I'm glad that you did talk earlier about the points. I want to, I guess I'll replay your podcast because I wanted to get the information on a lady who was doing some fact-checking with respect to the movie.
Yeah, I'll give you her name right now. It's actually Michelle Alexander's sister, and her name is Leslie M. Alexander, and she is a professor of African American and African history. And I believe it is at, if they put it down here at the bottom, she wrote a very in-depth article. She is a professor in the Department of African American and African Studies at The Ohio State University, where she specializes in 19th century black culture and political consciousness. She teaches courses on slavery, resistance movements, and historical accuracy in film. So, I mean, if people had read this article, they would have seen the context of which she was. They acting like, oh, she just trying to kill the film. Black people can't do nothing. I mean, come on, man.
She was just doing her job by fact-checking. It's hard for a person of her caliber to hear nonsense when it's not true. It's just like if you're correcting, you know, you have a little baby and you're correcting, he says 1, 3, 8, 7. You're like, oh, no, honey, it's 1, 2, 3, 4. You can't say, oh, he's just a little baby. He don't know. He has to learn to know the truth. You know what?
My oldest grandson, I just went through that. So his task was to count all the circles in the kitchen. So that mean the cabinet doors, that mean the round clock, anything that's a circle. So he's going around the room counting them off, but he kept skipping 22. He went from 21 to 23. It took us a couple of minutes to get this boy to stop skipping 22. He wanted to do it his way. I like, no, that ain't the right way. So go ahead.
No, so I mean, you know, we're making examples because we want them to get it right. I want to get it right. You know, I was looking at the film, be honest. I really thought that that was true, that the little black boy, you know, was being a proxy racist, because I always hear you say that term.
Uh-oh, we having some issues with your audio. You kind of just went out. Let me see if I can unmute you and mute you back. Okay, her line was kind of crackling, and I think it dropped off. So I'm going to go to the next caller. If your line clears up, 973, I have you unmuted. Okay, there it go. But let me go back to 973, see if that cleared up. 973, are you there?
Yes, I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened, sir.
Your connection sounds a whole lot better.
I was saying that if I would have called in the last week when I saw the film, I was on the woman's program, The Lotus Place, and gave my opinion, I would have felt like a complete idiot because I thought that this young black boy was being a proxy racist in the film, and I thought that was true. I thought all that stuff was true. So, I mean, for you to give us the information that I'm getting right now, I'm like, oh my God. You know, why wouldn't I want to know the truth? I don't want to go out telling someone, oh yeah, this is what happened. And for someone to act ignorant and don't want to know the truth, I question that person, you know? And I'm just glad that you gave it. That's why it's very imperative that I read Leslie Alexander's article. Now, where was it published at, actually, Mr. Reed?
TheNation.com. I did publish it to my profile page on btrcommunity.com. If you're not a member, my profile is public, so you'll still be able to check it out. My profile is Scotty T. Scotty T.
Okay, great. Mr. Reed, I also did want to comment on the film. The only reason why I liked the film is because my daughter was there yelling, yay, yay, I'm just so glad somebody was fighting back. So
right.
She started yelling in the theater. But I thought the film was poorly, I mean, I did not like it. That's why I didn't really want to comment on it. I thought that it didn't seem real in a sense. I said, this doesn't seem like what
authentic.
I heard this guy to be. Guy doesn't seem like Nat Turner to me. But, you know, again, you know, like you said, he got paid his $16,000. His $16 million for telling lies. You know, white supremacy is going to push lies. So, you know, I'm so happy to hear that you and your crew at the abolitionist network is getting a film together, something that's going to be real and truthful, and put it out there, because we need to do our own films. You know, we really need to tell our own stories. I haven't looked at the 13th. yet, but I do have, I don't have a Netflix account. My daughter has one, and I'm going to look at it through hers before your show starts tonight, because I really want to see how that's definitely depicted. But I, like I said, the film to me was not, I was, because I said to myself again that I never wanted to go see any more of these slavery films, but the fact that Nat Turner rose above the rest, I was really anxious to see that. And in a sense that where he, you know, it looks so stupid to me, having, you know, when I saw the way they were fighting, Mystery, having, like, I don't know, I think they were probably, what, maybe 50, 60 people fighting against guns and bullets. I mean, did he really go up against people with bullets and he just had what did he have? He had lingings, I don't know what they had, but you knew that they were not going to win based on their weaponry, okay? So, to me, I'm asking myself, was that true? Didn't he have guns? I mean, I know they hadn't been that stupid to go against a bullet versus their own, you know, manpower without any type of
I think they had machete, you know, whatever they could find, machetes, a hoe, you know what I'm saying, you know, gardening tools, whatever, pitchfork, whatever I can run through the back of a slaver, you know, but I get you. Again, the rebellion, as she states, never even made it to that town to have a shootout, because the militia, as you so eloquently just put out there, this is organized, trained, armed militia, and how they prevented them from getting there to the town. Maybe they were on their way to the town to try to procure some weapons, and perhaps that's why John Brown, when he did his raid, and not just him, but I mean it was some black people involved in that raid on Harper's Ferry, maybe that's why they were trying to get to the armory first, you know what I'm saying, because they learned from
exactly.
That yeah
because they could never thought, I mean let's just have some common sense. A bullet's gonna outrun me than a rat. I mean, I thought it was so stupid. I'm looking at this movie, and I'm saying, there is no way he thought that he can outdo these people with arm.
But see, the part that was left out, and you saw it, and she brings this up in her film, and just to let y'all know, I am going to go over an hour since we have caller participation. I'll go ahead and go over an hour. But she does mention that he leaves out of the film that Nat Turner was motivated by his spirituality, his belief in the Christian God. And maybe that's why they left it out. See, there's this myth that's put out there, or this broad stroke that say, oh, Christianity just made black folks passive and whatnot. And that's not true. A number of Denmark Vesey was a preacher. Okay, very religious person and what have you. Denmark Vesey down there with Gullah Jack and the uprising in Charleston. Okay, so he saw that Nat Turner had visions that he interpreted from God of him being a leader of a quote-unquote race war that would finally eliminate slavery. So he was motivated by spirituality. Some would even say religious fervor in believing that slavery is so evil, it's of the devil. It's Satan is behind this, and me as an agent of the Lord must rise up and smite these evil doors. You know what I'm saying? That's how Nat Turner was going at it.
That sounds more like a Nat Turner to me than, and then I just thought it was so pitiful. I guess maybe some of the scenes graphically, when my daughter was sitting next to me, seeing this white guy just take out all the teeth. I mean, I just wanted her to see that evilness. You know, sometimes they like to hide that. And what really just broke me down, I mean, just really just got to me, is when the guy goes to slay the master, and I think it was his daughter in the bed with him. That little girl had to be no more than 10 years old. I'm sorry for getting a little emotional.
That's okay.
The girl has to probably be no more than 10 years old. And I'm like, oh, my. You know, I know you read about it, but to see it graphically up there, you know, it's just, I like I said, I didn't want to see the film. I'm glad my daughter actually had the opportunity to sit down and see something, because she never seen Ruth. She didn't want to see Ruth. She said, but she liked the fact, again, that there was a value, that the slaves were not passive and they were rising up. So that really just
got me. Well, let me read this part. Let me read this part, and I'll grab the next caller. I'm gonna take another station identification break at the top of the hour. After I get your commentary, because this is from she again is speaking not only from a historian's perspective, but from a woman's perspective, and she says this. I'm quoting her from this article in The Nation. Like the film's other fabrications about black women, the rape storyline is carefully constructed to redeem black masculinity at the black woman's expense. According to The Birth of a Nation, all of the women in Turner's life were passive victims in desperate need of black male protection. This fabrication flies in the face of the historical facts. There is overwhelming evidence that Turner's mother fought valiantly against slavery, even attempting to commit infanticide when Nat was born to prevent him from being enslaved. Yet Parker and Celestine depicted her as a meek, mild victim who resigned herself to slavery. Cherry and her daughters are also portrayed as helpless victims who suffer unspeakable horrors until Turner rides in on his horse and vows to seek vengeance on their behalf. The only other major black female character in the film, who is brilliantly played by actress Gabrielle Union, does not speak a single word during the entire movie. She literally has no voice, and like all of the other black women in the film, she has no agency. Instead, like Cherry, she is a victim of a horrifying rape which must be avenged by the black male heroes in her life. I just have questions. If Nat's wife wasn't raped, he wasn't motivated by the gang rape of his wife, if his mother was a strong resistor to slavery, why would Nate portray them in the total opposite? I don't understand.
Well, I study marketing. It has to be some type of sensationalism to make the storyline whatever.
But isn't that Turner's?
There's always got to be some sensationalism in there. It can't be like people will get bored, they say, because probably they test market or whatever. Oh, people get bored if it's just just all fast. We got to have a little bit of this in there. We got to have a little bit of that. Because, I mean, here we have the proxy racist. The little boy, right, that this never existed, because you're saying everybody's hating on this black little child, like, why did he do this? So, that's sensationalism there. Then her getting gang raped, that's even more, not that it didn't happen, but you have to have, I guess, maybe those are the grabbers of the film, and he says, again, bunch of lies, he's getting paid, hey, whatever, I did put Nat Turner's name out there, people do know, if they want to do their research, they'll do more research on, but me, Nat Parker, did bring him back to life. That's how I really take it in terms of being a capitalist on this, because again, he was trying to make money, and how they say the two evils, I get him out there, but I have to do this to conform to
white supremacist standards in media.
Thank you so much, Daddy, for letting me speak. I'm sorry if I get a little emotional.
That's okay. At least you're being rational in your emotion. That's where we get in trouble with emotions, is when it causes us to think irrationally, or we allow it to make us think irrationally and we don't ask the right questions. But thank you.
Thank you so much, sir. You have a pleasant weekend.
You too. Okay, let me go ahead and take a station identification break and then go straight to the phone lines. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News on Black Talk Radio Network, providing you with new black media for the new millennium. The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab. Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. I put the tuned in to Black Talk Radio, the new black media for the new millennium. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Just one quick point made from a New Jersey girl, our last caller. I thought about those things too, the sensationalism of something about, oh, it's going to be too boring. But Nat Turner's Rebellion was not boring. Why you need to sensationalize something that's already sensational? So, I asked myself that question that you raised about the marketing aspect and, you know, is it going to be a boring story? And no, Nat Turner's story is not boring. The real history is not boring. It's sensational enough that we didn't need, you know, to see black women brutalized on film like that. But again, you know, yeah, those things did happen, but I'm just a stickler as an amateur historian. I'm an amateur historian. Always been my favorite subject in school. I don't have a degree in history, but I read from the same books that people with degrees do. Okay? And so I'm like her too. I'm a stickler for these facts. I call out these crackers, racist crackers in Hollywood when they mistell our stories and don't stick to the facts. And I would be wrong if I didn't call out somebody else just cause they black for putting out the same thing. I ain't attacking him personally. There's nothing personal here. Hey, propaganda is very important. Media is very important. I'm speaking at this professionally, as the president and founder of a Black Talk Media Project organization. All right, let me move on to the next call. Area code 702. Thank you for calling in. Go ahead and share your comments or questions.
Hello, this is Jay from Ohio.
Hi, Jay.
And I did want to let you know, I actually did read your commentary about the Nat Turner movie, because I felt like at school I heard something different about him, and I thought that there was some part of the rebellion that ended with like a pregnant woman being hung and then her baby being cut out of her womb and the baby being stomped. But I don't know if maybe I'm just misinterpreting it or just misremembering it, but I definitely appreciate your input. And then I did also read the link that led to the article from the professor actually here, which I'm definitely surprised I didn't know that she was actually at the Ohio State, which is not that far away from me. But I was definitely concerned about whether to go see the movie or not, not just about like the rape allegations or what have you, but then like you said, you know, there are just so many different slavery movies, and it was even hard for me to get through like the Roots remake, because I feel like how many, I don't quite understand why we're still only focusing on this part and maybe not even doing enough focus on the part where our ancestors were still in Africa and how they were doing fine. They were well before we were brought over here, or even like after we were brought over here. What about the good things that African Americans were able to accomplish throughout so much oppression and terrorism, true mm-hmm. terrorism? So I'm still actually definitely up in the air about going to see the movie. But another thing, I don't want to speak too much in depth about it, because you did say that because Max hasn't saw the documentary, and I listen to the station all the time, so I was really excited about seeing the 13th, and I thought it was definitely very interesting, and I definitely appreciated the fact that they at least called out the companies by yes. name that were
yes.
profiting
yes.
off of modern day slavery, and mm-hmm. that's something that I truly appreciate, because I've been trying to do more research on my own as far as making sure that I'm not continuing to help keep people enslaved, because that's the last thing that I want to do. And even trying to also spread the word, and when somebody goes out to eat fast food, I try to always spread that message. And even when I saw some Idaho potatoes today at the store, I told my cousin, this is the product of slave labor. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to buy this. I'm not going to. And it just seems like it's so hard, because it's just so far reaching. And,
yes.
and it's like part of me just is really losing hope, because it's like it just seems like such a beast and wanted to do more. But you feel like, what can I do if I don't even have enough to you know, barely do something for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not as worse off as, you know, other people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely my piece of it.
All right. Well, I'll...
It definitely made me cry. I'm sorry. It didn't. The documentary is even going over, you know, all the victims of,
mm-hmm.
you know, the slave catcher brutality. It definitely, once again, brought tears to my eyes, but it always does.
Mm-hmm. I want to say again, I think I said this at the beginning of the program. I'm not directing this at you, caller, but just to anybody who's listening, there is value in the film, but I was disappointed because it didn't focus enough on the history of the 13th Amendment, and I didn't hear the word slavery enough. I kept hearing mass incarceration, and I kept hearing reform, and I never heard abolition. But I do appreciate the film. I'm even going to go back to what the last caller said. Even though this film, Birth of a Nation, is supposed to be about the Nat Turner Rebellion, is historically inaccurate, I do see the value in getting his name out there on that level, on that stage. So maybe people will pick up a book or go watch a real documentary about him, or, you know, dig the records. Most of the records are online now, and just do further research. Maybe, you know, that'll cause some people to do that. So I see some value in it, but at the same time, I do have to lodge my I hope to be constructive criticism. I'm hoping it's being viewed as constructive about the dangers of historical inaccuracies in movies, no matter who makes them, whether it's a racist suspect or a black person or a Latino person or whoever. I just want truth. I want the historical truth to be adhered to as much as possible. So that's just, but I do see the value. I do see the value, but I'm just not seeing it as much as others are claiming to see in it. So those are my thoughts. Did you have any other thoughts before we move on?
Oh no. Well, the only thing is that I'm glad that you said that. And so I guess it kind of just makes me want to research it rather than maybe going to see the movie. But I appreciate you taking my call.
Okay, thank you for calling in. We have another caller, area code 719-719. Go ahead with your question or comment.
What's up, Scotty? You know this is your Midwest brother over here, Ramon.
What's up, Ramon?
How you doing, sir? I think you're doing a good thing here by reviewing this movie, Scotty. I will go on. I'd like to say this is that I'd be concerned, you know, about sometimes them showing these movies of these uprisings and stuff,
mm-hmm.
that always tend to end with us dying.
Right.
And the only reason why I feel that way is because typically, in my mind, it sets up an alarming, you know, it sets alarms off into, you know, our opposing.
Ramon, I don't mean to put words into your mouth, but these are the words that popped into my head as you were speaking, based off of the words you did speak, is that these movies are always ending in the defeat of the victims. And so that may reinforce into some people's mind that no matter what you do, Whitey gonna win in the end.
You hit it right on the head. And but just as I was trying to reinforce that as well, is that it sets up in them the fear to go ahead and keep pushing, you know, towards this narrative that they all seem to have. I'm right here in you know this about me. I told you, we're in one of the most, I would call probably the one of the states that probably is reflective of diversity in the sense of population, you know, what you can see outwardly. But it ain't no mistake, man. These people, and I'll just share this with you so you get understanding why I'm saying it. Quickly, I have a customer I'm working on their house. They make ammunition. I happen to see it upon doing a couple of alterations in the area that they were making their ammunition in. I noticed a practice shooting target. On that target was the face of a black so-called zombie person called Darkonics. I really want black people to really understand that when we talk about these type of movies don't, like you said, they reinforce another type of thinking in my mind. You know, they give us the weak, lean look, and then they reinforce that, yeah, this is what's going to happen if you ever stand up. So thank you for saying that. And I also want to say this, is that something I'm starting to hear a lot of us say on this radio station is that white people in the public are starting to use that terminology we come up with, racism, white supremacy. This is something I realized, or at least for me, I believe that we need to learn to get as codified, and when I say codified, I'm talking truly code language.
You form a military, though, right? You form a military like myself, right?
I won't claim form a military. I got kicked out because I'm like you. I'm not fighting for America. I'm just not doing it.
Right. So what I mean, though, you probably went through some of the training and whatnot, so you understand what a real code book is.
Yes, sir, I do. So with that being said, I understand that we're going to have to stop letting them co-op us so much so that they turn it around on us, and now they take the power away from these words that we're trying to use or these understandings. Because what happens, and this is what I'm starting to see, once it hits the Facebook world, it gets so diluted that everybody just starts throwing it around. Mm-hmm. And then these our children, as you know, they so young, they can't understand it. They see it as these people are on their side when they're using it in, like, the Huffington Post and all these places that they're not trying to shed light on it. They're trying to keep up the rhetoric without just being
Let me interject something that you just brought to my mind. And I actually had this conversation with a white person who is an abolitionist. They part of the modern abolitionist movement. So I had posted the video in our abolitionist group, the one that's on Facebook. We got another one we launched. It's on btrcommunity.com, our social media platform. But, you know, we're not going to abandon our current propaganda operations behind, you know, on the enemy's platform. So I had posted on there about the little, I made like a 2-minute clip. I played 1 minute of it, was the speech from the CEO of AT&T talking about Black Lives Matter and saying, right, you know, talking about racism and we need to have these conversations and all this and that. So then I pointed out that everything he talked about, all the ills that he say is facing, quote unquote, people of color, that his company's policies is a part of that oppression, because AT&T has been using prison slave labor since 1993 because they didn't want to deal with unionized labor no more, so they took it to the prison. And then also think about that date. That was the time of 3 years into Clinton administration and their move towards that's 1 year. That's 1 year, if I remember correctly.
1 year, yeah, 92. Yes, sir. You're right.
One year into it. And when they started moving all the money to the private prisons. So from day one, they knew that they was about to get in on some slavery and they was going to increase their bottom line. So the white person said to me that, you know, I understand what you're saying, but don't discount the value in him saying Black Lives Matter. And I was like, well, I'm not discounting his words or him talking about these issues, but since he says some, you know, we need to have these uncomfortable conversations, so I'm interjecting his business's practices into the conversation that he probably don't want to have about their use of prison slave labor. And so, you know, I appreciate him saying it because he opened the door for me to point out, hey, if black lives really matter and it's not just a phrase coming out your mouth, stop using prison slave labor. Pay them people what you would pay them if they was on the outside. What's your hiring record for felons, for people that just got out of prison? Are you got some kind of second chance program in your hiring practices, or are you just, you know, using these black bodies behind bars to do your call center work, but then when they get on the outside, oh, you ain't got no place for them. So that's how I feel about that.
Well, I think, well, Scotty, I think you hit that right on the head. There ain't no other way to look at it. It was disingenuous is how I saw it. I don't even listen to that. I'm an AT&T customer. I've called and fought with them many times about why you ain't even got a customer appreciation program. We can end at that. I'm more concerned about, like I said, I think we need to get real serious about always trying to share our lingo, our styles, or whatever y'all, whatever we want to call it. We really need to get out of that. And, you know, we like to get into this spotlight that makes us look like, yeah, I'm hip, you know, and that can be our detriment a lot of times, is what I figured out. Me, far as this Birth of a Nation movie, hey, man, I could take it or leave it. I'm going to be honest. And the reason why I tell people this all the time, if you live through the experience of this stuff, you don't need a movie to tell you that. You don't need a book to even tell you that. And so many people want to pretend as though they haven't lived through the experience, even currently and presently. I myself can tell people, even working for yourself as an independent contractor, you do not remove yourself from that. My customer I just mentioned to you, I went into it like you did. She wants to be an abolitionist, but as soon as I hit her with a few things, because she came at me with this, well, I was reading this history and I'm trying to figure out how did black people lose all their wealth and riches and stuff. You know, I took that offensive, but I didn't react.
Mm-hmm.
I let her talk. And when she said that, I said, well, if you're reading all that book, I mean, if you're reading all that, somewhere in there, I would assume they made mention of events that probably led up to, you know, somebody taking something or maybe murdering and killing people.
Right.
She squirmed so hard, man. Only thing she could say in return was, I feel so bad. I said, well, if you feel so bad, and because she asked me the question, what do you think we should do? I'm going to be honest. So I hope a lot of black people are hearing this. It ain't been said once, but I'm going to reinforce it. Mm-hmm. I told her myself, the best thing white people can do for black people is leave us alone. We don't need you talking for us. You don't know my experience enough to even talk on it. If you want to talk about it from your perspective. Mm-hmm. But black people need peace, and we don't need to be in the circle or neighborhoods of white people.
Well, that's Ramon, let me offer... Let me offer another perspective. Now, in terms of white people or anybody else adopting our style or our lingo, we don't have any control over that. That's been our history of our existence. You know, anytime white people do something.
Hold on, Scotty, you say that. Hold on. I ain't trying to argue with you. I'm going to say it this way. They've done a damn good job keeping us out of it.
Out of what?
When they come up with their coded language, it take us. We almost be 20 years behind by the time we figured out what the hell they done said.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is we don't have control over what they do. I don't see how we can. I mean, unless we're having private conversations, if we're communicating with each other in a public forum, we don't have control.
Well, I just said we need coded language.
But let me say this from an abolitionist perspective, and I just wrote about this, and I actually had mentioned this in the conversations on the 13th that I was having with other people. They started talking a lot about Black Lives Matter, and they made the film more about the oppression of black people than they made it about actual slavery, in my opinion. Now, what am I asking for as an abolitionist? I'm not asking for black people to be less enslaved than white people. I'm asking for an end to slavery, period, because I don't think anyone should be enslaved for any reason. Okay? And now whether we're talking about crime and punishment and rehabilitation, that's something different. But that's not the same as slavery. Slavery is when you're exploiting the labor of another person and you're not paying them for their labor. And just like slavery pre-1865 is still going on. So, you know, that's my codification on that. I'm not going to get sidetracked by the racial angles that they may try. And I've heard Mr. Neely Fuller even talk about this. When you're talking to white people in public, don't ask, don't say, is it wrong for the police to brutalize black people? Say something like, and I'm paraphrasing, I mean, these are my own words, but it's based off the concept he put out there. If you out there having a conversation, let's say you go to a town hall meeting to discuss the problem of slave catchers murdering people in your community. So you know it's a bunch of white people in there. It's probably a bunch of white people sitting at the table that's quote-unquote in charge or whatnot. And so you don't ask them, should we be allowing these police officers to brutalize black people like that? He said you should ask a question more like, should we be allowing police officers to brutalize people without interjecting race into it? Because soon as you interject race into it, that's when the race is going to look to derail the conversation and take the focus off of the issue, which is the slave catcher killing a person. I don't care what the color of the person is. If the slave catcher is unjust in his actions, then he should pay for his unjust actions. All right. So that's how I'm like, that's one of the things that I have really held on to and really have tried to adopt that I've heard Mr. Neely Fuller talk about, is that we shouldn't be using these racialized terms. Codification is a way to explain oppression without interjecting race into it. Cause like me, now he did say this. He said, as soon as you say the R word, everything, it's over now. It's over now. People gonna get emotional. Well, I'm not a racist, and you are a racist, and now you ain't talking about the problem.
Exactly. Hey, Scotty, I'm gonna let you go, but I want to say this or ask you this before we leave. If you would send me a personal email, tell me what it is you think, or how much of a budget you think you guys would need to produce your version of the 13th from earlier you was talking about. I want to help with that. And recently, I'm just trying to find out, how can I get on to that new media thing? Or have you finished it yet? You said you was going to create like
I'm gonna
a
do
social
it.
Media
I'm
going to
do
bus.
It this weekend, because I was having trouble with my video streaming software and I needed to figure some things out. And then it also didn't work. I had purchased some software I needed to record so you could see everything, and I just got that fixed a couple of days ago. So I'm gonna work on it Saturday, because Saturdays is when I'm not producing live programming, so I'll have time to make that video. So yeah, I'm not gonna post it to the internet, but like I had mentioned to you, I'm gonna put it on DVD, because this is stuff I have copyrighted and I'm tired of just giving away. And I'm gonna read a letter I got from a listener today. And but I'm stopped giving stuff to people for free, because a lot of people ain't appreciative of it. And
exactly.
You know, I put these YouTube videos up there and whatnot. It's more white people taking advantage of them than black people are and what have you.
Exactly.
And I'm
exactly.
not.
Let me say this before I go, because I know you got to get on. I just wanted to know. It's important for me to emphasize, please email me. Let me know what you think of budget or whatever you feel like
for this film
to make that happen. Yes, sir.
Okay.
I want to be a part of helping you find funding for that. I believe I can. So I want to put myself out there. And as soon as I'm done painting my studio, I had to remodel it. So me and you, I'm going to get on that, my part of what I said I want to help you with as far as audio engineering. And I'm done. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, we had actually, in my mind, I had already planned on a no-budget film. I am the king of working with a little and trying to squeeze a lot out of it. So I certainly appreciate that offer, because I was already saying, okay, how can we do this documentary? There are some experts, some constitutional lawyers that we have had on New Abolitionist Radio. Okay, I don't have a budget to where I can fly to where they are. I don't even have a professional. I do have a high-definition video camera, but I don't have the kind of, you know, that they make movies with and stuff like that. So I can't fly to these people. So I was already thinking, well, I got this software. I could just do the interviews via Skype and record that and then spot. So, Brother Ramon, man, I'm always working on a shoestring budget. So anything that anybody can contribute would be extra, would be gravy. It really would. So I don't have a cost figure right now, because I got to get with the guys that's going to help us put together a script and work that part out first. But yeah, I appreciate that offer. Again, tonight at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, we'll be talking about the 13th, which refers to the 13th Amendment of the Constitution. I do think that there is a lot of value to people watching that film, but as an abolitionist and one who has pushed the message of the 13th Amendment for 4 years now consistently, you can imagine I'm a little bit disappointed, because I would feel that the uninformed person would still walk away with from this film and calling it mass incarceration. We need to call it slavery, because that's what it is. What's going on, let's just call it what it is. You know, keep it real. It's slavery. The Constitution says it's slavery. It looks like slavery. It operates like slavery. It smells like slavery. Damn it, it is slavery. Why we gotta call it mass incarceration? People will be more moved if you called it slavery and exposed the fact that slavery was never abolished. And then, you know, and then you're talking about, oh, we just need criminal justice reform. No, we don't need criminal justice reform. We need abolishment of slavery and everything that entails. And that includes the slave code laws that are on the books now. So that's how I feel about that. Let me go ahead and clear the caller's queue.
Q&A queue.
We are at the 30-minute mark, and I am going to wrap up. I need to get with Dave to make sure he's going to be on air at 6 o'clock. He sent me an email saying he would be live today, but he didn't post a description for his program, which I already took care of, but I'm hoping nothing else happened. So at 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m., Tando Radio Show will be live. And then at 10 o'clock p.m., tune in for a special live broadcast of New Abolitionist Radio as we review this film, The 13th. Now, I want to share this email that came to me. It came to me from the Black Talk Media Project, our platform, Black Talk Radio, blacktalkmediaproject.org, where I have listed their digital radio engineering services, where how much it costs for us to engineer a radio program for someone who wants to launch a radio program on our network. Okay, now we have a certain percentage of programming that we don't charge the host. That is being subsidized by the donations to the Black Talk Media Project. And so those slots, those free slots, are filled. And we do still have a current slot open for a person who is either based in the Caribbean or based in Africa, living there. We do want to give you free services so that you can launch a program on Black Talk Radio so that we can include more of the diaspora and hear some of y'all perspectives on what you're seeing. So, but we do have engineering services. So this is a way for us to continue to fund our media operations, is we offer services. We just don't ask people to make donations, okay? We do provide services. And so anyway, but this is a web, this had nothing to do with the digital radio engineering service, so I don't know why the person going to email me from there. But let me just read this. Let me read this. And I just found it very offensive and very passive aggressive. And I'm reading this because I know there's some other people out here who might have this mindset. And I also just want to provide clarification about some of the things that has happened on the network. So this is what this is. The person's name isn't important, even though they're using a fake name. That's not important. But this is the comment. Man, what happened to all of the shows? When I tune in now, all I hear is Scotty, Tando, Codebreakers, and The Lotus Place. The radio program has lost its appeal. You need at least 9 different types of programming messages to be relevant. Otherwise, you become boring. Nothing against Scotty or the others, but without a good balance of views, it ain't gone work. I listened from outside the beast and the programming was right on point, but now I tune in and then immediately tune out. The station has become repetitive now. What happened, man? Plus, there are so many technical issues with the connection. I will continue to tune in, but you are about to lose me, my brother. I was about to start, and this is key right here. This is what really stood out to me. I was about to start financially supporting the programming, but now with what you offer isn't worth it. Maybe I could be an eye for the community outside of the beast. sound like they not here inside the United States. I have a different view on things and can see from a unique vantage point. Anyway, man, you got to get Gus back on for one. He was really my main reason for checking out Black Talk Radio. Peace. Black Man Outside the Beast. Now, again, I had announced last week, and somebody actually contacted me, but they live in the United States. They, I think, had just returned from Africa, but it was about a week or two ago that I first put out that call for somebody in the diaspora, either in the Caribbean or in Africa, to get in touch with me. We want to produce a radio program for you and help you produce a radio program and air it at no cost to you on the network. All right, so sound like this person is one of those, but it doesn't sound like a person I want to work with. You know why? Because first of all, there are more than just those programs mentioned. He failed to mention Change Matters Solution. He failed to mention Time for Awakening Radio. What else did he fail to mention? New Abolitionist Radio. In terms of the Lotus Place, the Lotus Place host had work scheduling issues. That's why she's not on three times a week, and she's only on Wednesday nights now. It's because of her personal schedule. It ain't got nothing to do with me or Black Talk Media Project. Now, also, I really don't give a... Let me just read my response. Because I found the letter to be very... The email to be very passive-aggressive, to be infactual, and to actually be an attack on the network. This is what I wrote back. The Lotus Place comes on once per week instead of three times a week due to her work schedule changing. There are more programs on than you have mentioned, and there are new programs in the works. Things happen out of our control. There are literally thousands of podcasts available on demand. We just expanded broadcasting to our YouTube channel. Gus runs his own station on our platform. His station would not exist without my help when he got kicked off of white people's platform. What are you complaining about? You can tune in to his station anytime you get ready. Are you emailing him about the repetitiveness of his station playing archive podcasts when nothing is on live? Our regular donors don't complain, and any connection problems that you are having are specific to your ISP and not on our end. No one else is reporting these issues except when we had to change our radio server and TuneIn did not update our stream. Keep your money. Some people love to complain about what they are getting for free but contribute nothing but criticism. I don't beg people for money. We put out a regular call for donations like any other organization does. But if you think I am going to kiss your ass to get a donation out of you, think again. If you were a donor, you would have gotten the email reports over the past few days on all our media operations and would see we are reaching hundreds of thousands every month through those operations. However, despite all these people consuming the media we produce, less than 100 have ever made a donation so we can improve our operations. I don't care too much for the opinions of moochers who take and never give. This operation isn't cost-free, but apparently you have been consuming without ever putting a dime in the tip jar. No hard feelings, just being real with you. So that's how I feel about that person. I was my daughter said, don't share that on air. I was like, no, I share the good emails we get. I'm going to share this one too. So I hope I answer your question or anybody else with similar thinking. You don't pay a dime to download any other podcast that we produce. You don't pay a dime to tune in to this radio stream, no matter what platform it's on, whether it's on Streamer, TuneIn, or our own platform, BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. So you don't pay a dime for that. You don't pay a dime for it. But apparently you've been tuning in long enough to get some value out of it, but you haven't put a dime into it. So what does that say about you? That you want to complain about some programming that you ain't paying for? Do you call white people's platform that you don't pay for and tell them how crappy their programming is? All right. And so I found that to be passive aggressive. The reason we no longer carry the context of white supremacy Saturday night compensatory call-in on this program is because I'm overworked. Okay, I try to identify. I said, you know what? You're working 7 days a week, sometimes 16-hour days, if not more. You got to take a day off. So Saturday is my day off when I'm not broadcasting anything. And it's not like I'm being paid to broadcast his program on our network. Okay? But his program or his station exists because of our work. So why are you coming at us? You can still tune in to his program anytime you get ready to. So I found that to be very passive aggressive and just taking a dig at us and our programming on the network. And then, you know, for you to say, I was thinking about giving some money, but I'm not now. Whatever, man. You think somebody gonna beg you to donate some damn money? I will go back to pulling plasma out my freaking arm to pay the bills like I did when it first started. We received, again, less than, I think last month was the first month we've ever raised $1,000. That's how I was able to purchase some of this software, this video software that is going to help us with our production quality and what have you. Still got to get Max some equipment that I forget to keep ordering. Max, I'm going to get that ordered and get it to you, bro. All right. So, you know, for somebody to complain about something, we're working on a shoestring budget. These other stations are not. I bet you a bunch of people are donating money to Democracy Now! And Amy Goodman, and that's why she has an excellent professional broadcast and able to do so much and update and got all these other people working. Those people get paid. This is a volunteer. Everybody on this network has volunteered. Nobody's being paid. And some of the other hosts and what have you, they have programs. I don't see no black businesses reaching out to them to advertise on their programs or to even advertise on this station. So we doing, I feel, a great job considering the very minimum financial support that we get. If I was running this like a business should be run, we would have folded shop a long time ago. We'd have closed the doors. It'd have been no Black Talk Radio. So that's what I got to say to people who want to send me letters like the one I just read to you. You know, sometimes, although I disagree with you on the value of the content, I think we have very diverse group of people. Tanya Free and Friends, didn't mention them. They have a diverse panel, but I don't see repetitiveness as being a bad thing. That means we're staying on message. That means there is a uniformity on the message or the problems that we're facing. Some people need to have it drilled into their head. For 4 years, we've been repetitively telling people day in, day out, that slavery was never abolished. The 13th Amendment has an exception clause. We went through each 50 of the states' constitution to point out any exception clauses for slavery in there. We brought on constitutional scholars and what have you. And we have beat that drum and beat it and beat it, and we will continue to beat it. And it is only just now that we're starting to see in the quote-unquote some of the mainstream outlets where these people are talking about, y'all know what? 13th Amendment didn't abolish slavery. This ain't mass incarceration. This is slavery through the prisons. They didn't end slavery. They refined slavery. So you need to be repetitive, because it takes some people need to have that information drilled into their minds. And plus, you never know when somebody's new tuning in and what have you. So anyway, I was kind of debating whether I wanted to share that, but I can be passive aggressive too. I can be very passive aggressive. So if you don't have anything constructive to contribute, then you know what? Don't send me any communications whatsoever. I can take criticism, I can take constructive criticism, but you know what? I'm going to put the value of your commentary on how much you have given to the North Carolina-based nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. Your contribution was zero, so I place zero value on your input. Thank you. This is Scotty Reed signing out. Coming up at 6 o'clock p.m., we should be broadcasting Tando Radio Show. Tando Radio Show focuses on global events, also focuses on preparedness and real money. And a lot of people like that program, and they think there's nothing wrong with the programming on Tando Radio Show. So hopefully Dave will be able to do his program coming up at 6 o'clock. With that said, recognize the fact that slavery was never abolished. It is not police brutality that we see, but the brutality of the slave catcher. All right? And these extrajudicial murders that are going on are a symptom of slave catching, a symptom of slavery. We got to get past the symptoms. Yes, we want to name the symptoms so that we can treat each individual symptom. But if we don't never get to the root cause of the disease, then guess what? Those symptoms are going to keep coming back and popping up, and possibly new symptoms. What's the disease? Well, quite simply, that disease is slavery, and it needs to be abolished. And I hope that everyone who is listening to my voice right now will join the abolitionist cause and become a modern day abolitionist so that we can abolish modern day slavery. Peace and blessings to all.